Today, Does Not Compute is sponsored by Zendesk. Zendesk is a great service that helps you solve support. No matter how much polish you put into your app or how many bugs you fix, at some point users are going to need support. Zendesk provides mobile SDKs to help you bring native in-app support to your apps quickly and easily. That means no more email us links. Users can read your help documentation and submit tickets without ever having to leave your app. Since this is all integrated directly with your app's code, the tickets can be set up to automatically include information about the user's device, app version, usage info, and more. By providing quick, easy access to help, you can help prevent small problems from turning into frustrating experiences for your users. Best of all, access to their SDKs is included with Zendesk for no extra charge. They provide a default UI out of the box if you want to get going quickly, but also support building out your own fully custom UI. I use Zendesk pretty often day-to-day at Imgix, and it really does make support much easier. Make sure to check them out today and learn more at zendesk.com/doesnotcompute. So, Sean, do you have all your stuff now? Did it finally come?
Yeah, it came finally. Got everything set up.
That's got to be nice.
Yeah, except for they broke a bunch. Like, okay, so I need my coffee. If I don't have it, I'll go through withdrawals, as you know. And they broke my Chemex. And this morning, the power went out.
Oh, no.
And so I live on the second floor of an apartment. And so there must be pumps or something that push the water up. So I went to get a glass of water while the power was off, and of course, no water came out. And after the power came back on, I went to wash my French press. And the strange thing about my kitchen sink is that it has an obscene amount of power behind it. So if you turn it on all the way, whatever you're washing will shoot water onto the wall behind you. It's crazy. So I was washing my French press. I just can't remember that word. I was washing it, and an air bubble came out, and then the next shot of water came out like a bullet, knocked my French press out of my hands and shattered into the sink.
Well, it's been a horrible week for your coffee accoutrements then, I guess.
Yeah, so I have, my remaining item is a pour over, which is made out of metal, so I don't think that will break anytime soon, but.
You got rid of your AeroPress?
I gave that to my dad, actually. I made him one cup and he was hooked, so. Yeah, I'm down to a pour over. So, you know, hopefully I don't somehow step on that. I don't know, but we should be fine. We should be fine. Apart from that...
You think you'll make it through the winter?
Yeah. Apart from that, they broke a few more glass items, and just mixing two boxes didn't show up, so...
Ew. That's rough.
But all the computer things came. All my desk stuff came, and all my guitars made it. So I think I'll be okay.
That's good.
Yeah, it's been interesting. First, I've been here, almost 3 weeks now, maybe?
Something. I think this is the third episode we've recorded since you were there, yeah, so...
Yeah, so it's been pretty good. I mean, the remote stuff's going fine. I'm getting work done. The office is set up and everything's been great. I haven't really noticed any differences so far. Communication's been fine. Projects have been running fine. The only thing I notice is that I'm super productive in the mornings because nobody else is awake. So I just blast through work and then I just kind of coast a little bit in the afternoons. That's usually when I catch up with everybody, answer questions, organize, you know, that's when I have meetings with whoever I need to have meetings with. So it's been pretty okay.
Nice. You end up exploring the town a lot more or not yet?
Well, there's not much to explore. So today I went down to the river for a little bit to check that out. People like to sit in tubes and just float. I think I mentioned that. So saw a few groups doing that, but it's pretty nice. It's not as cold as the Pacific Ocean, and that's also okay by me. So I can actually go in the water without a wetsuit.
Nice.
Yeah. But I find that since I am really productive in the mornings, I've been spending more time actually focused on learning stuff, if that makes sense. So before, when I was learning stuff, I wasn't really retaining much because there was just so much on my plate. But now I feel like if I'm really productive, then the work isn't kind of churning in the back of my mind. I don't feel a pressure to kind of stop doing something that doesn't equate to money for the business at the current time. So I don't know. It's been kind of less stressful for me all around in that sense.
So what does your typical morning look like then? How do you balance that between the learning new stuff and the getting work done?
Well, I use timers a lot. So I have, again, I have the Dropbox paper thing, and then I have timers. And so my typical morning would be, I just wake up. I always wake up really early, just because I do. I don't even have to set an alarm. I'm just up. And I get up, and I check to see if, you know, I miss any emails from the day before. I check Slack, reply to any messages. And then what I'll usually do is I'll just close Slack for a little bit, because I know no one else is awake yet. And I'll just kind of plug away with, you know, I'll make sure Twitter is closed. I'll make sure Slack is closed and my email is closed. And I'll open up my Git issues, and then I'll just kind of figure out which ones are pressing and chop away at those.
Nice. Yeah, I've actually been doing something kind of similar to your timer idea. Basically, I'm just trying to time box everything lately. And I'm not using anything fancy to do this or whatever. I literally just set up a calendar in my personal calendar. And kind of the goal of this system is that every minute where I'm awake has a blue block on it. It just has something that determines what I should be doing at that point in time. So what's really nice about that is if I do it right and everything is filled out, then I don't even need reminders for these things. It's just whenever I finish a thing, I just look at my calendar and it'll tell me exactly what I need to be doing next. So that's been pretty interesting. And that's, when I say everything, I mean everything. It says the time I need to wake up, what I need to be doing from the time I wake up until I leave for work. It accounts for travel time to work. It says all the things I'm going to be doing at work, meetings, and the actual stuff I need to get done. So I'll have just like blocks of time for each project. When I need to leave work, travel time home, recording ads for this podcast, recording this podcast, even down to like relaxation time. Everything in there is just scheduled out. And so far it's been really great.
That sounds really nice. Like, I like the idea of having that scheduled. I just don't like to be the one the scheduling to. I don't like to be the one to do the scheduling. So the interesting thing is, when you say that, it makes me think about something I heard Conor McGregor, of all people, say recently. If you're not familiar with him, he's a UFC fighter. He's one of the best fighters around in a long time.
Oh yeah, I knew that.
But he was talking about, how basically successful people, like on average, really, like not just kind of like quote unquote successful, but like people that are really, really successful are like that. They're super disciplined in their planning and their scheduling.
Yeah. And that was always something that I wanted to do. Of course, everybody wants to be more organized, but until, you know, a week or two ago when I started doing this, or at least started experimenting with doing it, I always thought that it was going to be like so much work. But it turns out so far it really hasn't been, because I always kind of have an idea of what I need to be doing anyway. And what this allows me to do is actually make pretty educated guesses about how much time in a given day I'm going to need to spend on that thing. So I have this project I'm working on at Imagix right now called Cortex. And since I'm planning everything out like this, I can say, okay, I know there's probably going to be some open source tickets I need to take care of, so I'm just going to block off an hour for that on this afternoon. I have a meeting here. Okay, so that leaves me with about 2.5 hours in this afternoon to work on Cortex. And so I just block that in. And then it's in there, and then I know exactly how much time I have, and I'm like, okay, what can I get done in 2.5 hours? And it just kind of allows me to more effectively target things that fit well into the time that I have available.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, I might try to do that as well. I mean, when you wake up in the morning, you have more willpower, I guess. Like, you haven't been having to make decisions all day. And so when you wake up, your mind is, after you're actually awake, you know, your mind is sharp and fresh. And so it's easier to kind of make those decisions when you might not want to later on when you're tired or sleepy or whatever. It makes me want to try that. It's a little different for me because I don't really need to travel anywhere. I don't need to go anywhere. I just need to get some tasks done. So I don't know. I might give that a shot and let you know how it goes. I've been spending the last few days thinking about some side projects I have going. And remember, I keep talking about this guitar journal and exercise catalog thing that I've built like 3 different times.
Yeah, I've heard you mention it once or twice.
Yeah. So I've made it in Rails, and then I made it in Node, and then I redid it in Rails, and I just redid it yesterday in Node, API only. And I was like, why do I kind of take it to a certain point, and then I kind of lose interest in it. I stopped working on it for a while, and it dawned on me after you said like, oh, you're doing that again. I was like, why do I never actually finish this thing? And I thought about that for a little bit, and it's interesting. So we've talked about working on side projects a lot, how important it is to have something that you're working on the side, because you can use that for learning and exploring. You know, you might be able to be more daring there than you might be able to at something that you're paid to make at your job or something. But I started thinking about it, and it dawned on me that I was more interested in the technology, learning about the technology that I was using to make the thing, than I was in actually making the thing. And I guess that really comes down to not enough planning, honestly. So if I sit down and say to myself, oh, I want to make this app and I can use Rails to do it, then I start Googling, how do you do this in Rails? And so instantly my focus becomes more on the technology behind the thing instead of what features do I think people would really enjoy using.
Yeah, that's something that I do a lot with my side projects as well, where I'll get really excited about something and then work on it until it's no longer a challenge. Like, once I've figured out that I am capable of solving whatever problem I set out to solve, even if I haven't finished solving it yet, I'll be like, okay, yeah, I mean, that's good enough. I did the thing I actually wanted to do here. My goal, when I really think about it, my goal was never to actually build the thing. My goal was really just to prove to myself that I could build the thing if I wanted to, which is kind of weird. But at the same time, you still learn a lot from doing that.
Oh, you totally do. And like I said, it allows you to do things that you wouldn't normally use, technologies that you wouldn't normally. It's great for experience. Also, part of it for me was that the last half of the project, of the build phase, is the thing that I enjoy the least. When you get to all like the nitty gritty details and having to make decisions, that's the stuff that's not fun for me. I like the initial build. I like the initial kind of challenge of it, and then it kind of fades from there. And I don't quite enjoy the last bit of work, which most of the time ends up being most of the work or the most difficult work.
Right. It's the first 90% and the second 90%.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But then I realized, you know, I want to challenge myself, or it's good to challenge yourself. So yeah, I've actually gone further with it than this time than I did previously. And I have a GitHub that is just like a full issue hopper and with feature ideas. And so basically I'm trying to keep myself inspired, because I'll have that initial inspiration and I'll get interested in the technology, and then I'll just kind of fall off. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to learn more about myself in the second half of the project, learn more about how I go about making decisions and how I would go about launching an application that I think people might actually use. And it's been a fun challenge so far, you know, like rethinking features, like looking at something that I made and thinking about it and be like, well, do people actually need this, or is it necessary? Or just kind of skimming the fat off the top and saying, I don't think this is useful for an MVP or a first build. And so it's kind of, it's not easy, because that the interest in that stuff doesn't really come natural to me. But the more I kind of push myself into that area, I find the more interesting it is becoming. And I don't know, I'm starting to enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, planning around projects really at the end of the day is a pretty critical part of doing dev stuff, especially if you're doing lead dev stuff, obviously, or freelance work, like solo things often requires so much planning up front. And you would kind of think that it would be the same as programming, but it's really a very different set of muscles, a different set of brain muscles that takes a lot of work to learn how to do all those things properly. Like, architecting an application and making all those decisions is such a different skill than actually being able to build stuff out. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, at least at first, when they try to start making architectural decisions.
Yeah, it's a whole different skill set. It's a whole different set of tools that you need to learn, set of ideas that you need to learn. I mean, the whole thing is an iceberg, really, and it's just another section that you might not have explored before. But I also was thinking about it like this. You know, I have a certain number of items in my portfolio. Some of the apps that I've worked on in the past have either closed their doors or sold or something like that, you know. So it's not like on my current portfolio I can say, I made all these apps. You know, I call myself a full stack developer, and then I'm like, here's one or two you can look at, or here's one really you can look at, you know. So I started thinking to myself, if I want to keep getting work in that area, if I want to move away from PHP CMS style builds for freelance work or side projects or something into more things that are interesting to me, like building APIs and building clients that use APIs and making applications like that, I need to have something to be able to show, you know, that I can do that and not just three half finished things, right? Another kind of log in the fire that's fueling me building this is I want to have something that I'm, you know, proud to show people potential clients or potential bosses, something that I worked on, something that I called all the shots on, you know, something that I can really show off what I do. And what's interesting when I say that is, I'm not trying to be conceited, but I've been doing this for a while now. And so now I feel like I have the confidence that I can make something that people will think that, oh, that's really nice. You know, that you did a good job. It's kind of like when you're learning to play an instrument for a long time, you have zero confidence and you just don't want to play in front of people. But after you hit a certain point in your playing, you feel actually comfortable playing around others. You know, you're not really necessarily worried about what kind of feedback they might have for you because you're comfortable with where you're at. And so I feel like in my programming career and my design career, I'm starting to get to that point where I'm not as self-conscious, if that makes sense.
I think the music analogy is a really good one in this case, because there is such a really distinct point where you go from nobody can hear me to, oh, actually, it's kind of a really cool rush when people hear me.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing. And the funny thing is, there's like this weird limbo state between the two, and it's the worst place to be because you know that you have the skills to play, but if you're playing and you think you're doing a bad job and people can see you, you tend to like roll the volume back. If you've ever seen a guitar player just kind of like roll that volume knob back, and you're like, oh, they're nervous, you know? And it's in that limbo state where you're kind of like rolling that volume back. That's where the mistakes happen. That's where, well, at least in music, that's where the mistakes happen. I can count on, you know, every audible mistake that I made where I know like I screwed up was in that limbo where I wasn't totally confident. And I was rolling the volume back and I was being self-conscious, because then you're not thinking about producing. You're not thinking about making good architectural decisions. You're thinking about, what if I screw up in 10 seconds? Like, the next chorus is going to happen and I have to play this hard part. And I feel like I'm about to fall off this bike, so to speak, right?
Yeah, I've actually done that before. Like, during a couple of my first early performances when I was doing a lot more guitar stuff, I would absolutely turn the volume down and just kind of step back and let the other guitarists take more of the forefront, because it is such a weird, scary feeling at first. And that is totally the same when you're building out your first applications, when you're moving into a new role. And this is for programming or anything else, really. But whenever you're tackling something new, and especially if you're in like a kind of a spotlight position, making architectural decisions, making decisions that are going to affect a lot of other people, it can be so tempting to be like, oh, actually, you know what, maybe I'll let so-and-so, I'll let this other person kind of handle it a little bit more, because I don't know if I'm ready yet. But the unfortunate truth is that until you actually step up and start making those decisions, you're always going to feel like you're not capable of making them.
Exactly. It's just kind of like putting yourself in places where you're not comfortable in growing in that position of limbo. And so maybe that's what I think I'm trying to do. I'm trying to, you know, find something that I would use personally, and I'm not trying to expand it. Like, so I told the idea to one of my friends and they're like, well, we can make this work for, we can make it apply for anything, you know, but I'd rather have it just more focused straight up front. And that way, you know, at least I can build what I need and maybe other people might find it useful. But then I have the added benefit of saying, here's a cool thing I built with Node and never released anything with Node before, you know? So it's just kind of, I guess it moves me into a new arena of being able to pitch for work and things that I never have been able to do before. So I don't know. It's like, I re-listened to that episode where I think it was Jake Schwartz maybe asked, you know, how do you go about planning for your careers? And this might be one of the first things I've done in a while where I kind of made a calculated decision to build something with a certain tech stack that I thought was interesting in hopes that I could move in that direction.
So what is it specifically that you're liking about Node that makes you want to move in that direction? I think that seems like an interesting choice to me.
Yeah. I mean, there's other things that you could say this about too, but for Node, I like that it's really light. It's fairly modularized. So you just kind of need to use whatever does the job, and it doesn't come with lots of extra things that I need to know about. For example, I don't need to use up my limited brain activity knowing about something that I will never use, if that makes sense. And maybe that's a terrible argument, but that was just something that interested me at first. But really, what it comes down to is a lot of my getting paid right now is front-end work and JavaScript work. And I do want to build more APIs. That stuff is really interesting to me. And I started with Elixir, and I still really enjoy Elixir. To me, it's a fun language. But the majority of my time is spent in JavaScript. And I feel like if I don't have to relearn a new language along with a new framework, so to speak. So like if you want to learn Phoenix, you have to learn Elixir at the same time, right? So kind of like if you want to learn Rails, you kind of have to learn Ruby at the same time. It was, with Node, I don't really have that issue because it's JavaScript, which I'm already really familiar with. I've been writing it for a long time. So for me, it's a calculated decision in that I don't have two things to learn at once. I have one API to learn, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's just for you, a lower barrier to entry.
Yeah, I guess I could have said that instead of my long-winded explanation. But that's really it. I mean, it's lower barrier to entry. It's pretty robust. There's lots of documentation around. It's fast, you know. I mean, it's a decent platform. I mean, people have their problems with JavaScript. I have my problems with JavaScript, but I keep looking at it like this stuff is all still crazy. The fact that we're able to build the stuff that we're making, you know, build the applications that we're building. And I don't know, it just makes me feel like I'm not really necessarily concerned with the language details of JavaScript, like the shortcomings in that department. Just the idea that we can run Node on anything, right? To me, that's pretty amazing. And that's what keeps pulling me in.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about JavaScript that I've loved ever since everybody hated JavaScript, is just that it was so approachable and it was something that could run literally anywhere. And I mean, back when I started first doing a lot of JS, that was, of course, literally anywhere meant only on browsers, only on the client side. But now it is actually anywhere. Now you run JavaScript on servers all the time. So much JavaScript runs on servers every single day, everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, and you can run it on almost everything. It's pretty wild. I think the other thing that pulled me in was the framework that I was using before, Rails, made a lot of decisions for you. So your app structure is always the same. Where you put things is always the same, or, you know, mostly the same. There's like kind of like blessed ways of doing things, and you just kind of follow that convention. And so I mentioned previously, but my biggest, you know, barrier to entry to Node was, where do I put this file? Or, you know, how do I treat this structure? I don't even know what to do, you know? But kind of like once I got over the hump a little bit and started to form my opinions, it became really fun. And because then I was just kind of bolting on what I needed when I needed it. And if I didn't need something, I didn't concern myself with it, if that makes sense. And so I've been using happy.js, which is an offshoot of Express. It was originally built on top of Express and they kind of moved away. And they do have a lot more conventions that come with it as opposed to something like Express. But it's not shipped all in one bundle, so to speak. So for example, if you want to do some sort of schema validation, or not even really schema validation, if you want to do validation for your input coming into your application, there's a library that the makers of Happy make called Joy, and that's the one you would use. There's others out there if you wanted to, but that's the one that just kind of like is plug and play with happy.js. And it's a great library. Similarly, if you want to standardize how you're throwing errors back to the client, you would use a library they have called Boom, and it's great. It plugs in with Happy. I mean, it's made by the same people, right? So it just works. It just works is what I'm trying to say. And the APIs are small. If you need to use it, you use it. If you don't, you don't.
Right. It's a lot of the same things that are available in any other stack, like a Rails stack, for example, but it's just more modular and you just pick and choose the pieces that work for your application, which is really cool. And it's definitely a different philosophy, but it's an interesting and completely valid one for sure.
Yeah, it's just different. And maybe that's what it is. Like I guess I'm known for switching editors every week. And because I always see something like, ooh, that's cool. And then I'll kind of dive into that for a little bit. But maybe that's what's happening now. It's just been sticking with me for a little bit longer than normal, I guess.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, though, either, because if you don't explore, you're never going to find the next cool thing that you really love and end up using for years.
Yeah. And so the newest thing I'm exploring, Paul, is MongoDB.
Yeah. How are you liking that so far?
It's weird. I started using it. I'm not using Mongoose or anything like that. So there's different layers that you can use on top of Mongo, but I'm just using Happy MongoDB. Which is not, you know, that doesn't come with an ORM or anything. It just gives you hooks to connect to the database basically, and then makes it available throughout your app. So instead of spinning up a connection to your database and then exporting that everywhere, Happy actually has, this is one of the things I like about Happy a lot, is that it has a way that you can, when you register plugins, that plugin is now available globally in your application. For example, if you have an endpoint that would list journal entries in the handler for that endpoint, the handler is a function that takes a request and a reply argument. And the request is just an object of the request, right? And inside the request object has a plugin object that has all of the information that's shared for that plugin. So if I need to get access to the specific instance of Mongo that's running, I would do request.plugins.mongo.db, and that's the actual connection to the database that was started when the server started. So anyway, I digress there. I thought that was kind of a cool feature. But yeah, so I'm just using Mongo bare bones. And the first thing I started thinking about was like, all right, how do I define my schema for my database? And then it dawned on me that you don't. There is not one. It doesn't have one. You just start putting information. You make a collection, and then you just put documents. You put whatever you want in the document, and you just, it just is, you know? So the barrier to entry in spinning up web application with CRUD stuff was like too easy, because I didn't have to do migrations. I didn't have to make models. I didn't have to do any of that stuff. Just started putting data in the thing, right? That forces me to rely on the Joy library quite a bit to make sure that data is coming in, because I'm sure there's ways to validate stuff on the Mongo side, but you know, without having a straight up schema that has validations, you really have to make sure that you're making sure the input coming in is correct. But yeah, Mongo is different. It's cool. There's a lot of people that love it. I'm intrigued so far. I can't say I love it. I can't say I hate it, but I'm using it. So we'll find out.
That's the only way to find out is try things.
Experimentation.
Once again, this episode of Does Not Compute was brought to you by Zendesk. Zendesk helps you solve support for your apps and services by providing great tools for communicating with your customers and managing support tickets. One of the really cool things they offer are mobile SDKs. They allow you to quickly and easily integrate help documentation and support ticket submission directly into your app. It makes things easier for users and easier for you, because those tickets can automatically include information about the user's device, app, and app usage history. Take a look at Zendesk by visiting zendesk.com/doesnotcompute.
Are you still recording? Okay.